Hello, and thank you for joining us for Life Without Limits, Planning with the PA Family Network. I'm Courtney Miles, and today we're joined by Jennifer Harneman-Krangel. Jennifer is a licensed social worker and family facilitator with Philadelphia Coordinated Healthcare, working on behalf of ODP. Jennifer, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We're excited to have you here. So I guess just to kick it off, can you explain what the role of a family facilitator is? I'm guessing a few of us probably aren't super familiar with that. So what is it and who do you connect with?
Absolutely. So I am in that role as family facilitator. The role was created probably back in 2019. I started in 2020. And I like to say it's easy to explain, but hard to do. My role, really simply put, is to help children who are living in pediatric facilities or hospitals who are medically complicated get back home to their families in the community. The other half of that job that I'm doing is to also help kids who are living at home with medical complexities stay there. So families that are really struggling and are considering a facility-based placement, I can work with those families as well to help them keep their children home.
That's an incredibly important work.
Thank you.
So why is it important for children with medical complexities to be with families?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. It's important because children need to be with families. The facilities that care for children with medical complexities do a really nice job, but they're not families. And kids really benefit from saying goodnight to mom, dad, or somebody in that role and waking up and seeing the same person. There's safety there. There's stability there. That person is not only doing the medical piece for the child, but also doing the developmental piece and the emotional piece and the spiritual piece. And kids that leave facilities and go home, their lives change so drastically. You know, we see everything from their health improves to their emotional health improves, their ability to get out into the community and do things that other children are doing. That takes off. So it is really very important to have kids growing up in families and not in facilities.
So I think that this seems like it would be a touchy subject and a challenging subject. Surely I know you talked about it just now a little bit, touching on when the children get back into their homes. What have been some of the positive outcomes and what have you seen happen?
Yeah, I think some of the positive outcomes have been about, children being able to experience that family peace. So having other children around, we know from our own development, having brothers and sisters and cousins and, you know, people who are kind of leading the charge, showing us what's to come next. A lot of that is wrapped up in children's development. So I really see kids that are going home, their language starts to take off. I had a little boy who was 5 go home. He had been in a facility or a hospital his whole life. And 2 weeks after he was home, his mom called me to tell me that he has two words, his first two words. The first one was mom, and the second one was no. And I thought, of all the words in the English language that a child needs to know, how important are those two?
Those are pretty perfect.
And I really felt like he started to feel like he had some control over his care, you know, that he was saying, no, I don't want you to do that to me right now. And I want this particular person. I want mom. I don't want a nurse. So I thought that was like a perfect example of how that those changes come about. excuse me. I think the other piece is, you know, often these children, they're not able to go to school for a variety of different reasons when they're in the facility. And it's not the facility's fault. Once they're home and they're accessing their schools in the community, their education piece starts to take off and their IEP really feels a little bit more substantial and full. So I think that education piece is important. And again, having that caregiver who is your advocate, who is really, challenging systems to do the best that they can for their children. You know, I think that's an important piece as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we all know that it can't be easy. Can you discuss some of the challenges that families do face when they're looking at this option, like getting enough nurses to cover authorized shifts, access to accessible housing and
Yeah.
transportation?
Yeah. So when I first start working with a family, we talk about what is their vision for their child, right? Starting with those life course tools. What do you see for you and your family? How do you see this working? I try to be very upfront and honest with families about the reality of the nursing shortage. I can say that in 2020, that was a different world than we are in 2024. And some of those barriers are starting to lift. Nursing is always going to be a challenge. So I speak with families about recognizing that, and understanding that all of those shifts are not going to be covered all the time. And we talk at great length about the fit of the nurse. You know, and the first question for the family when they're talking and they're doing a meet and greet with a nurse is, do you have the skills to care for my child? You know, if they're trach and vent dependent, are you able to use those machines safely? Do you feel comfortable with those machines? Through that conversation, if a family, or I'm sorry, if a nurse is comfortable with that, then we kind of go on to that next thing. How's the fit? How's the fit with the family? In a perfect world, families would have hundreds of nurses to choose from. In the world we live in, it's not perfect. So sometimes that choice is a little limited. So we talk about the deal breakers. You know, deal breaker is a nurse can't provide the adequate care, doesn't have the skills necessary. That's different than I just don't really like this person. She's kind of, you know, maybe she's cold or maybe she's got a hard boundary. And those things we can work through. So nursing is definitely a barrier to getting kids home, but it's not an impossible barrier. And we do have kids that are going home with sufficient nursing. I think housing will continue to be a problem probably for a very long time throughout the state of Pennsylvania. I know there's lots of good programs out there that families can tap into, but you know that housing piece is critical to supporting a child with medical complexities in the home. So we try to get that as stable as possible. Transportation, and that varies across the state. Some places have more transportation than others. Some children can only be transported by ambulance. So we start to really look at specifically what does the family need so that we can adequately plan for them and have that open conversation about, okay, here's the plan, but if things aren't going in that direction, here's some other things that we can try as well. We tap into a lot of the natural supports of families. And I think families go to great lengths to find the solution to the barrier or the problem or the concern. I think they really want to have their children home with them.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's absolutely true. Just getting there is so challenging, but thankfully you guys are there to help with that. I love how individual it seems, and you try to, match as much as possible, while still being realistic, because that's, I think, important and difficult. So, can you touch quickly on how this service is paid for? Is it insurance? Is it a waiver service?
So it's a little bit of both. So nursing for somebody who's under 21 is always going to come through their MCO, through their insurance company. However, we are able to fill some of those gaps that insurance can't cover with some of our ODP services. So offering families the ability to be a paid caregiver often is a deal breaker for families being able to bring their children home. So the life sharing service, obviously that's a waiver service that's available. Adding additional staffing to the nurses. So if it's a child that requires a lot of hands-on care and a lot of moving back and forth between bed and wheelchair and floor and, you know, beanbag, what have you, sometimes it's really necessary to have two people there. And adding that additional staff person while they're not doing the medical care, it really, really helps the nurse be able to stay in there long term. So we're able to add in services to what the child's currently getting from their EPSDT services. So it's a little blending of both. And on top of all that, if a child's under five, they continue to get early intervention services, whether it be the birth to three or the three to five preschool program. So often the teams that are involved with these families are quite large. because we have so many systems kind of interacting at the same time. But I think the benefit to that is we really do weave together a really nice safety net for families and a really good complement of services to keep the child home with them.
And do you find that the services work together pretty well to make that happen as much as possible?
I think they do. And it's funny. So I've been doing this job for 4 years now. And it's definitely transformed a lot in those 4 years. And I feel like I see the same process with all the teams that I've had the honor of working with. And it basically is, in the beginning, we first pull the team together and we have facility, we have parent, we have early intervention, the special needs unit case manager from the insurance company. We have this large team come together and everybody's a little quiet and a little, how is this going to work out? People, I think in the beginning, we want to kind of stay in our lane. And often the other people at the table are not familiar with the other services that come along with that person who's representing EI, insurance, et cetera. And as we go through the process of planning for this child and planning for the return home and talking about all the strengths and all the barriers, suddenly all those the stay in my lane attitude, it just fades into the background. And we really start focusing on, okay, what are we talking about? What does this kid need to be able to get home? And it becomes less about, well, we're the payer of last resort, and more about, all right, let's just figure this out and we'll worry about that part after. And I can say that we have successfully brought home over 35 children in the 4 years. Not all of them have waiver services, but we do have a number of families that are now the paid caregiver through their life sharing agency. And we have currently three children that are either living in or about to be living in recruited family homes. So again, I really like to point that out, that this idea of family, and we talk about this a lot in Life Course, is very broad. Sometimes it is very traditional, mom, dad, siblings living in one home, but sometimes it's not. And when it's not, it really is amazing. When we get the fit right and we get the right person in there, everything just kind of clicks and falls into place.
Start to see the kids start to flourish, I bet.
Yeah,
That's so exciting.
exactly.
That's a lot of work to go into that. Those that's I'm that's exciting. You said 35 children have been brought home.
Over
It's
35.
over 35 children. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I guess switching gears here a little bit, are there steps that families can take if they feel they need to look at an intermediate care facility for their child? And what would some of those options be?
Yeah, so I think the first conversation really needs to be people come to me in a variety of different ways. So again, this is not a one size fits all. But typically what I see is the conversation starts to happen with the special needs unit case manager through the insurance company. And it's usually happening because there's a gap in support. So there's a gap in nursing. That's the big one. When families aren't getting the nursing support in the home, they're not able to sleep because they're up all night caring for their child, especially if they're trached and vented, you have to have an awake caregiver. And then families really start to feel the stress of, my nurse didn't come. I've been up for 3 days straight. And on top of all that, I have to call out of work because I'm the backup to that nurse. So that's kind of the bind that families find themselves in. So usually it's that first call or that first conversation is happening with the special needs unit case manager, and they're reaching out to the families on a very regular basis. At that point, usually the case manager will say to the parent, I think maybe you need to speak with the family facilitator. She might be able to help you. And that's when we start talking about what else do you need to keep your child home. And it usually comes down to, I'm in a financial crisis because I can't work because there's gaps in nursing, and I'm concerned that my other children aren't getting what they need. There's a mom out there that has given me permission to talk about her situation. She often presents with me at conferences like Everyday Lives or the Life Sharing Conference, and she really goes into a great deal of detail around that. Meaning, when her son was initially home, she was calling off of work a lot. And it would get to the point where the employer would say, you know, we understand you have a medically complicated son, but you also have that we need you to be here. Your coworkers need you to be here. And she was kind of in that predicament where she's the sole income, she's a single mom, and now what does she do? Because now she can't provide for any of her children successfully. So that mom in particular, she did make the decision of having him go into a facility. She talks about bringing him out, and she talks about being the paid caregiver as the game changer. Because what she was able to do with that is, A, there's that financial stipend, which is important. You know, that takes the burden off of the family from having to work outside the home, although they still can. It's not a requirement that they don't. And the second piece of that life sharing service is the program specialist. So having that person walking alongside her, and having somebody that she can reach out to and say, "Hey, my nursing is falling apart," or "Hey, this really cool thing is happening. You know, I'm taking my whole family to a baseball game to celebrate a birthday," right? That kind of support is really the value of that life sharing service. So I think I might have gone on a little tangent there, Courtney, but you know, the point being, you know, taking that first step and saying to somebody, "I think I'm in trouble. I think I'm getting to the point where something's got to give." It could be the supports coordinator that they're talking to. Families who have their children registered with their county office of ID and autism, they've got that supports coordinator. They can lean on that person and also share these concerns. Typically, though, I really do see this coming through the MCO case management piece, as that starting off place. And I think the good news is we do have some support to offer families that is meaningful and makes sense.
I think that actually leads right into my next question, what I'm curious about. So, how can parents get more information about receiving support for their medically complex child?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So one of the ways we're getting this information out again is through the MCO case managers. Parents who have children with medical complexities are able to register their children prior to having a diagnosis of ID or autism. And the way we're able to do that is through the medically complex criteria. And I just want to talk about that for a quick second. So children that have the need for technology, which is typically like a ventilator or a feeding pump, they have the need for skilled nursing, which most of these children have, and they have conditions that affect three or more body systems, right? So think, you know, those specialists, cardiology, urology, neurology, pulmonology. If they have those three areas covered, and they have deficits of daily living in three areas or more, that's captured in an adaptive scale, they meet the criteria to come through the door at the county offices. So, you know, alerting your county office, "Hey, my child has these conditions," they can give you the forms. It's forms that are not unusual to the county offices. So that's good news for families. So they can always reach out to their county office. They can talk if their children are currently in a facility. They can talk with the facility social workers or the program specialist there, and they can also help them get registered. And then once they're through the door, the supports coordinator can assist and explain to them what kind of services are available for kids with medical complexities. Today, we have waivers set aside for these children. So we've kind of taken that funding barrier and backburnered it for now. Which is really kind of a long way of saying that today we have waiver funding for these children. So counties aren't using their own existing capacity. So from my seat, you know, the more kids we can get registered, then we know about them and the families are getting the support from the supports coordinator. And then we can really start to get services in there and stabilize.
That's wonderful. So it seems like you're doing a lot of chatting with the families and intervening at the right moment to help get them the supports they need. It's just really fantastic. Thank
Thank
you
you.
for doing what you do.
Absolutely. It's great work. Very, very rewarding. And I think anytime we can help a family to stay, intact and living life in the community, we should be jumping at those opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from everything you've said, it's definitely helps them to excel the best they can and live an everyday life.
Absolutely.
So thank you. Thank you, Jennifer, for joining us today. Really appreciate you chatting with us and hope to have you on again soon. I know we'll be chatting more about this topic and plenty others in the future.
That's great. Thank you, Courtney. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us for the Life Without Limits podcast, Planning with the PA Family Network. We hope that you'll join us again to hear from more individuals. If you'd like to get in contact with us, we can be reached at 1-844-PA-FAMILY or on the web at visionforequality.org.